Hello, Red Shirts, and welcome to another episode of Follow Me and Die. I'm your host, Larry Hamilton, and today I answer the question of what is going on? So what is going on with me and with my AD&D campaign on Roll20? But first, I have a call-in that came in from Jason Connerly of Nerds RPG Variety Cast, and he left a holiday message. Take it away, Jason.
Hey Larry, Jason here. Just want to wish you a Merry Christmas. Hope all is going well. 2020 has been a rough year, but looking forward to 2021. Looking forward to interacting, maybe playing with you, playing some more games with you in 2021. So take care of yourself. I hope you get to spend some time with your family, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Jason. I appreciate you calling in, and things went well this holiday season. I did spend time with family. My oldest son and his wife and daughter live with me, plus their dog and their cat, so I get a lot of time with them. Of course, it wasn't long enough, as they usually are, but things are going well, and I hope all is well with you and everyone else out there. Now, a little musical interlude. So as I left off last episode of the podcast, it was time for session 55 the next day, and so here's what happened. The party were continuing their travels on the sand ships heading towards the necropolis, but they were having an attack against the wind, and they spotted a patrol of some group of some force riding horde beasts, and they decided to turn towards that group and advance towards them, and that group charged, and the riders dismounted from the horde beasts so that the horde beasts were free to jump onto the sand ships. And this appeared to be initially successful, but a well-placed fireball from the fighter magic user Elf took out a large number of them, injured their leader, and they had a war banner that was destroyed. Now, the party guessed correctly that this was a magical war banner, and I say was because I rolled a 1 for the saving throw. The magical war banner is no more. Other spells occupied several of the opponents. The two other sand ships that didn't have any of the party members on it managed to hold their own. The elf fighter magic user then charged the leader, and he dealt a serious blow, and then magic missiles from one of the other magic users dropped him. The druid turned into a bear and joined elven fighter magic user, and soon they only had horde beasts of the leader and the attendants to face, and then nearly all the horde forces were slain, but because they had these amulets of the necromancer, they started to get back up as undead. So they managed to remove the amulets from those that were not yet moving and dispatch those that had gotten back up. And the troll, Grok's Finger, who had been charmed by Charm Monster by the high-level magic user at the party, eagerly slew and ate two of the horde beasts. And then they enlarged him and sent him to deal with stragglers. And he was covered by undead who couldn't manage to do enough damage to stop him. And Turn Undead destroyed most of the undead horde. And Detect Magic revealed that only the amulets held magic. And all but the leader wore copper amulets, and the leader had a gold amulet. They burned all the bodies, and they decided, instead of continuing their plan of going straight to the necropolis and starting their fight with the forces of the Son of the Necromancer, they were going to rest up and relearn spells. And that's where Session 55 ended. So then Session 56. The party decided to rest to relearn their spells, and there are two horde beasts that the cleric ranger half-elf saved, and he had his hirelings, well, they saved them from dying so that they wouldn't animate, and they moved the ships a few miles away from the battle so they could hopefully rest in peace. They rested till nightfall, relearned spells, and so the cleric ranger cast Speak with Dead on the head of the leader of the group they defeated, and so they say, who or what are the top 10 in order of authority dangerous members of the Son of the Necromancer forces and allies to be found in the necropolis? And so I gave them a list of the names. That didn't really tell them a whole lot. They just had the names. To the best of your knowledge, where is the Son of the Necromancer expected to be today and next week? And the answer was, he seeks the key. And the next question, what are the machinations between the son of the necromancer and the powers residing at Fire Mountain? Because they see this deep conspiracy between the volcano Fire Mountain and its rumblings and the necromancer. And the answer is, all powers will bow to the necromancer when he is freed. So then he casts Speak with Dead again. What is the nature of the key that the son of the necromancer is seeking? It is an object of great power that will break the bonds and force others to kneel to the necromancer or die and serve him anyway. Where is the son of the necromancer seeking the key? I don't know. The guy didn't know. What skills are the cadre of the son of the necromancer known for? And he tells them, faithful and powerful servants of the necromancer. And then the other cleric casts Speak with Dead, and they ask a couple more questions. In what specific locations does the son of the necromancer seek the key? And the guy says, the clues are in the necropolis to the exact location and meanings and the means of retrieving the key. And the next question, final question, how do we enter the necropolis without being detected by the forces of the son of the necromancer? And he tells him, great mages and priests have failed to enter the necropolis. He must be greater than that. And so then, the cleric ranger half-elf cast divination, and he sacrificed the two horde beasts that they saved to hopefully make it a more powerful spell. And he was seeking information about the necropolis. And that spell tells them, in general terms, that there's hundreds of undead, warriors, a score of priests, a handful of wizards, a rich treasure. And depending on which actions the party takes, they could anger either powers of darkness or powers of light. So then they finish resting up, and then they finally decide to head towards the necropolis. And the druid turns into an eagle and flies ahead to scout and report back. They hear a rumbling back to the north, and they see smoke rising from Fire Mountain, and it lasts about 4 hours. And about an hour into their journey, the fighter Radon Brightflame, who claims his sister is a paladin and is the fallen paladin that they heard about back when, who disappeared in a flash of light facing some great unspeakable horror. And he fell into a trance, and the cleric ranger tries to cast command to get him to snap out of it, but he is thrown back on the deck and himself falls into a trance, and he hears the voice of the justice maker, do not interfere with my faithful servant. And Gaul then finds himself standing near the Radon before the justice maker in a vision, and hears the justice maker tell Radon to restore one of the four obelisks near the necropolis. It has to be blessed if they are to succeed in their quest. And so Radon wakes up and shares this with the others, and when they doubt this, Gaul wakes up and Radon says, ask him, he was there. And Gaul confirms his words. So they turn towards what they suspect is the nearest obelisk to the southeast, and about an hour into their journey, two members of the horde attack the party. One of them suddenly appeared behind one of the magic users and attempted to backstab him, but misses. I rolled a one, and I described it as his dagger caught in his robes. The assassin is gravely wounded, and he flies off. And another individual appears, and the party injures him, but not before something happens to destroy the words of the cleric's protection from evil scroll. And then that person was blinded by continual light. So the magic user casts fireball, and the assassin falls, and the other person remains aloft, but is dropped the next round before he too can flee. And the cleric ranger binds the wounds of the guy that they dropped last and tie him up, and they remove his necklace with a symbol of necromancer, and Gaul cures some of the wounds of the prisoner so he can wake up to be questioned, but he resists their efforts to give helpful answers in spite of torture, including having an eye gouged out with a dagger. Not very pleasant. Meanwhile, our druid sees the expanse of the ruins of the necropolis and realizes that it's larger than Haven, the main city of the Sand Vikings. The walls and towers and gates are in various states from collapsed and torn down to partially intact. And in the center of the city is a central raised circular area with the remains of the raised tower of the necromancer. And there is an entrance to the city to the south, and to the west and south of the gate is a camp where the druid saw another banner, this time black with the symbol of the necromancer instead of blood red. And further to the south, near a mountain peak a few miles away, he saw what appears to be a mountaintop temple of the necromancer with the mechanism for the lift rebuilt and activity on top. So this is the mountaintop they temple they came to from a portal back at the Temple of Binding. And then Canis head back to tell him what he's seen. Well, the ships finally catch sight of the obelisk, and it's on a small rocky outcrop, and it's broken and covered with symbols of the necromancer in blood. And they use 10 vials of holy water to wipe away the dried, sunbaked blood. And the cleric casts Bless, and the obelisk reforms and reminds the cleric ranger and the gnome thief illusionist of the time they fought guardian statues in the Temple of Binding that reformed after being destroyed. And finally, Canis comes to the place where they fought everybody, and he sees the familiar fireball-heated sands and remains of burned bodies being eaten by scavengers. He soon sights the masts of the ships and a growing obelisk that is reformed by the time he gets there. And so then the party debates whether they should bless another obelisk or just keep going to the temple. And that's where that session ended off. Next is session 57. So the debate continues about blessing other obelisks. So the high-level magic user charms the captured magic user who attacked the party, along with somebody who failed to backstab the other magic user. And they learn his name is Hadmar, and a bit more about his wand. It was, they rightly understood, a wand of negation. And they learn the names of the magic users, so the son of the necromancer. And that magic user has two underlings that are twins. And sometimes he stays near a good find in the city, or has claimed one of the towers along the broken walls of the necropolis. And there are 22 different towers around the necropolis in various states of disrepair along the walls. Hadmar tells the party that the son of the necromancer is sometimes in the camp southwest of the gates of the necropolis, and sometimes on the mountaintop temple of the necromancer in prayer and supplication, and performing the other rites of the necromancer. And Hadmar's companion on the attack on the party was Argon. And Hadmar encourages Chesty to convince the others to bow down and submit to the will of the necromancer. And the party decides to head to the obelisk northeast of the necropolis. And they send off the druid invisibly in bird form to scout the necropolis and watch for a large force heading out, because they suspect a large force will head out when they sense an obelisk reforming. But after they bless the northeast obelisk, they decide to sail west and bless the northwest obelisk. And then they turn south with a strong wind at their backs and aim for the southwest obelisk. And the druid comes back, but is now visible. He saw lots of undead digging in the city with a watcher or two for each group. And then he flew by the mountaintop temple, but became visible, and archers fired at him. And the new moon made the sails of the ship much harder to spot, and this encouraged them to press on. So the gnome illusionist and the cleric used his ebony fly, a figurine of wondrous power, and flew to the southwest obelisk. They see about a dozen shadows, but they're eliminated when Campion turns them. And then Campion blessed the obelisk and saw the graffiti fall away, and the obelisk reformed as they flew back to the ship. And so shortly before the thief illusionist and the cleric fly back to the ship, a couple dozen zombies were spotted, but the other character is able to turn undead, turned them, and destroyed them. Then Dinkus flew the cleric ranger to the mountaintop temple of the necromancer and deposited him about 60 feet above the floor of the open-air temple. The high-level magic user cast fly and followed them, and then four ghouls either saw or somehow sensed the cleric ranger or heard the wings of the giant fly and started climbing up towards the cleric ranger. So the cleric ranger turned them and turned them to dust. The high-level magic user flew over and held a rope while Gaul swung down to knock over a guard and show off his sword play, so a little swashbuckling. And between his skill with a sword and the wizard's wand of fear and the cleric ranger's ability to turn undead, they held their own until the thief illusionist showed up with the cleric and the other magic user, with the additional turn undead ability of the cleric in the armor from the Temple of Binding and one of the holy symbols from the Temple of Binding. He managed to incinerate a large group of undead, reanimating undead as well, and even live guards who bore amulets of the necromancer, and they burst into a bright, white, yet cool flame, and this light was seen by the ship still coming south, waiting to turn east once the thief illusionist made his last pickup. And so the thief illusionist is on his way to get the druid and the fighter magic user elf, and then has one more trip to go get the NPC Radahn. The high-level magic user kept using his wand of fear to deal with the living. He cut the rope for the lift, and many of those he made afraid were climbing down the rope and fell to their deaths 500 feet below after he cut the rope. The cleric ranger and the cleric fought the last human guards, and the cleric turned them as soon as they'd been slain, and they burst into those cool white flame. And then some undead that tried to attack the cleric burst into white flame if they hit him, and he was undamaged. And the last of the undead were slain, and the two copper amulets of the necromancer were retrieved. They gave them to the cleric, and they melted and ran like water between his fingers. And they noticed in the area where Gaul and the others came through the portal from the tomb of the necromancer, which is underneath the Temple of Binding, was a large mosaic about the same size as that portal that they had sealed up. But because it was occupied by the portal, they didn't know it was there. Well, the cleric ranger feared that it had some scrying ability that they believe the amulets have, and so he shared that with the group, and the cleric used his magic mace to strike the mosaic and hit it dead center in the nasal cavity, cracked the mosaic, and activated a mechanism to reveal a long unused secret chamber suggested by the dust and the cobwebs. Well, he rolled a nat 20, and that's why I ruled it hit exact center. And the expected arrival of the son of the necromancer and the rest of the party, plus checking out this long hidden chamber, was their focus for the next session. So the party members on the mountaintop investigate this chamber. A whisper is heard, "Find the dagger." However, the cleric does not hear this whisper. And the cleric ranger sets up a table and a blanket to block the morning sun from lighting the chamber or the place where the symbol of the necromancer was before the door slid aside, because he was afraid that somehow the rising sun would do something. And the cleric ranger saw no signs of tracks or other marks in the dust on the floor or the cobwebs or whatnot. And inside there was a pillar rising up from the floor with some sort of a scepter-like thing hovering over it. Some of the party members feel like they've been here before because it appears to be a copy of the room that was the tomb of the necromancer. And they decide to look for books and scrolls or other signs of writing, and they don't find any. And the cleric ranger grabs the scepter, and this scepter is what appears to be a human skull on top of an obsidian rod. And he grabbed the scepter, and for a moment he sort of felt like he was cut off from whatever or whoever the scepter belongs to and his own deity. But once he declares the scepter-like device belongs to the gaze above, his phrase that he uses to refer to his deity, he begins to feel the connection return to his deity. And he was reminded of the feeling he had when he was in a trance after touching the sarcophagus of the necromancer several weeks ago. Once they leave the room, Rinlan says the scepter is evil and suggests that they not touch it. Soon the thief illusionist arrives with the fighter magic user and the druid, and then he goes back to the Sand Witch, their party's sand ship, to get Rinlan. The high-level magic user decides to sprinkle dust of disappearance on himself, and the other magic user casts invisibility. Both of them read their scrolls that they got from Old Gorm of Detect Invisibility, because they expect the son of the necromancer to arrive soon. And the high-level magic user sees the carpet coming, and it goes low down to the ground and seems to stop for a moment before it resumes. And then he can see four crossbowmen on this carpet as it resumes, and he flew out. Well, he's invisible, and because it's dust of disappearance, when he cast Fireball on it, he stayed invisible. Well, magic carpets versus Fireball is a very low chance of save, so it burnt the magic carpet to a crisp and incinerated the crossbowmen and most of their gear, and they noticed that the four corpses floated down like feathers, feather fall. Then the two magic users kept watch, and soon one of them managed to spot the son of the necromancer flying towards them with three others behind. All of them were in plate mail, One of them fired a crossbow and missed, and that person appeared and just as quickly disappeared again. The cleric ranger tried casting a dispel magic on them, but it appeared to have no effect. The magic that spot them threw a lightning bolt, and the person with the crossbow appeared again and looked very singed. Well, it turns out this guy had a ring of invisibility and a bunch of other cool gadgets, and they all failed their, and almost everything the guy had failed its save. So soon, that guy, along with the three others, landed and attempted to overwhelm the party. The singed one read a scroll, and the other two behind the son of the necromancer downed potions. Well, the scroll was protection from magic. And soon the battle ensued with more magic cast back and forth than any other time in this campaign. Missile fires and all kinds of things happened. The cleric ranger was wounded, and he called for strength from the scepter, and it seemed like it healed him. But then he exuded a horrid body odor. For some reason, they think this is the Wand of Orcus. The high-level magic user slowed the evil party. The potion that the other two downed were both potions of human control. And this was all randomly determined magic when I created these NPCs. And only the number two magic user and the druid in the party were controlled and were bowed down motionless. And the singed cleric saved the son of the necromancer from the slow and the insects that the druid had called forth. And the son of the necromancer appeared to vanish. He actually did a dimension door to the far end of the temple. And finally, the thief illusionist picked up Radon from the ship of the party. And they got there. Basically, they went towards the undead coming at the ships. And Radon was able to turn them with one of the holy symbols from the Temple of Binding. An owl with a green tint approached, and the thief illusionist tried to use color spray on it, and that seemed to stop that. Then they flew close to the column of undead, and they kept turning them and destroying lots of those, all due to that amulet. Finally, they get to the mountaintop temple, and they charge the singed cleric. But there was a spell around the cleric that forced the fly back into its figurine form. That's the protection from magic. Finally, they get to the point where they're dealing with the two clerics. And suddenly, some of the party and one of the clerics is confused because the son of the necromancer cast confusion. And the confused cleric just walked up to the wall of the temple and stood there. The two party members that were confused, I rolled, and they attacked the foes, so it's basically like nothing happened. Soon, it was only the son of the necromancer and this confused cleric left, and the cleric ranger cast silence 15-foot radius on the son of the necromancer, but he saved. But before he could get clear of it and do something, the party rushed him, and they hit him hard, and he managed to fly up and out of their reach and over the edge of the temple in a dive. But the party's high-level magic user gave chase, and as he's chasing them, some demonic creature appeared behind the cleric ranger but didn't manage to hit him. Gaul wounded this creature. The creature tried some sort of fear effect, but it didn't work, and then the party killed this demonic creature. They assumed it was the familiar of the son of the necromancer, and actually, some of them had seen this creature before, but they didn't get the hint. We'll see if they listen to this and mention it. And the magic user chasing the son of the necromancer dealt two blows with his sword against the son of the necromancer and killed him. And before he could reanimate, he grabbed his amulet. But unlike the other amulets, this one's different. It sent a river of pain into him and caused him several hit points of damage. But he was unswayed and returned to the temple, his body. And while some of the party dealt with the son of the necromancer and his supposed familiar, the rest dealt with the confused cleric, and they slew, the other cleric was killed. It had risen up as a ghoul and rushed the thief illusionist, paralyzing him, and it was turned and burst into the cool white flames. They tossed the amulet from the now slain confused cleric on it, and it too was destroyed, and the amulet on the singed cleric was melted by the lightning bolt. And now the tired party prepares to loot their foes, while some look to see how the ships have fared. And that's the end of that session. That brings us to session 59. This is going to be a really long episode, but I want to get things caught up. So, at the beginning of session 59, the party is looking over the loot that they got last session, and then they turn to look north to see the fate of the three ships. Again, those three ships are the Soaring Eagle under Captain Cagnar, the Sand Splitter under Captain Kolgar. Those are the Sand Viking ships that brought the party from the Temple of Binding to the land of the Sand Vikings. And then the party bought a ship, the Sand Witch, under Captain Berger. So they see the three ships are turning to flee from the onrushing members of the Horde, and missiles from both sides most likely flew. And suddenly there's a fireball that engulfs one of the ships and it burst into flames. It started to break up and it stopped. And the other two ships were maintaining a narrow lead, tacking into the wind, when suddenly the wind shifted, and it was a very strong wind, and the rising morning sun was dimmed, and to the east a rising cloud of a sandstorm rushed in. And so that allowed the surviving sand ships to pull ahead and flee, and the party rushed to shelter in the barracks on the north side of the Temple of the Necromancer. And as they rushed, they saw the two surviving sand ships pull ahead, and they think for the moment they're safe, maybe they'll get away. They close the door behind them, they set up a watch, and the wind howls and the sand beats against the door until noon for 6 whole hours. So the elven fighter magic user forces the door open against the sand piled against it, and suddenly sees a spellcaster appear on top of a pillar, and the caster had attempted to charm him, not taking the time to see that Jorl was an elf, so the charm had very little chance of affecting him, and the two magic users blast him with magic missile, and the cleric magic user prepared fireball because they thought it had to be a really high level magic user, but it was too late. But the two magic users ripped him to shreds with their magic missiles, and so the fireball goes off, and because he was dead, there was no saving throw from him to protect his gear. It was a straight saving throw against his gear, and anything that he may have carried was incinerated. The fireball also ignited the oil chest he poured on the elevator winch in last session, and the winch was engulfed in flames, and thick black smoke roiled around. The number two magic user sent his owl to go find the ships, and the owl spotted two of the ships crewed by sand Vikings and a burnt tree poking from the sands. Since they had rested for 6 hours, they used fly that some of the magic users cast twice. One of them cast once, and they used that to help get people off the temple. They just lowered them to the area below where the elevator was, and so three of them had fly. It took them a couple trips. They got everybody down. The higher-level magic user and the cleric flew to the burnt ship, and then they came back and got the druid, who turned into a badger. When they get back to the ship, they enlarge him so he's bigger than a giant badger and helps them dig out the ship, and they soon find that it is the Sandwich, which they rightly guessed, and I randomly determined which of the three ships was hit, and it was so fortunate that it was their ship, and all crew and all animals aboard. They had some riding camels and some quolls, riding birds, the dog of the high-level magic user, their magic user charmed prisoner, and a very lucky hireling that had done all kinds of incredible things, but he couldn't survive a fireball. All hands lost, and the charmed troll was no sign. They're not sure if he was incinerated by the fireball or if he just wandered off in whatever was going on. So they managed to dig out their loot, and we had lots of rolls for saves for their loot. Magic items that had not been divided. Several really neat magic items were incinerated. A lot of piles of treasure were melted together. Thankfully, the other two sand ships returned, and they threw their loot on there and sent the sand ships away because a patrol of the Horde was approaching, and they were rushing forward on Horde beasts, and Horde beasts are very fast. And the high-level magic user cast a fireball. I determined who might have made their save, and that's where we ended that session. So finally, session 60. only the leaders and the horde beasts they were on from that group survived. They cast slow. Only one individual in that group was not slowed. They basically finished off that group fairly easily. But then another group is coming, and that was a little more challenging for a second. I thought I might really hurt the party badly, but they had enough high-level magic that they finished off the second group. So that's three sessions in a row now, including session 60, that I had huge battles. Not necessarily numbers of participants, but the amount of magic going back and forth. And they did have a magic user that looked like the magic user they killed up on the Mountaintop Temple. Remember I said there was a pair of twins, followed the magic user running around with the son of the Necromancer. Well, this was the twin of the guy they killed up on the other, but they didn't put two and two together. He dropped a stinking cloud on them, and that incapacitated several of them for a bit. So that made it interesting, but it wasn't enough to do more than slow down the inevitable of them winning. The larger number of the horde had gone to the base of the temple, but when they saw the fireball, they came charging back. The high-level magic user, after taking out the magic user that dealt with them and they defeated everybody, they grabbed what quick loot they could, magic items, or what they suppose were magic items. He unfolded the portable hole, had everybody hop in the portable hole. Everybody agreed to do that. Stock, the Red Lizard Man Ambassador, said something to Kastasa, his qual, and he jumped in with everybody. So it's a very full portable hole. He folds it up, sticks it in the metal tube he had, screws the cap shut, and he teleports. So this is the first time a teleport, first fifth level spell cast by a player in my campaign. This is the longest running campaign I've ever had, 60 sessions. Every session since I don't know how long makes a new record of the longest running campaign I've ever had. And so he rolled and he successfully got all the way back to Farthorpe, where the campaign started. And so now I have to figure out, is anybody in this place where they went, and what has been going on? I had to take the time and figure out how much time has transpired since they left. I've been keeping track of the time, but as far as how long it's been over a month that they've been gone. So lots of time for things to have changed. So I'm going to be kind of busy thinking that through. I'm really looking forward to how that plays out. I want to come up with something really interesting because they teleported back to the tavern, the Fallen Paladin, where the high-level magic user had charmed the proprietor and became partners with him and has his own room. And so he teleported into his room. Now, the proprietor is kind of a shady character, so whether or not anybody's in there, I've got to come up with an idea of who might be in there and what might happen. Plus, all the other things that have gone on behind the scenes, I've been busy trying to keep up with the party, not planning what's going on back home yet. So that'll be fun to see what happens with Session 61 and what they do with this skull-headed scepter thing they found. And if they decide to go back to the necropolis and find this dagger that they heard whispers about. And so that's everything that's been going on for a lot of sessions. If you've stuck with me this long, thank you very much for my long rambles. I'll try to edit out the long pauses so this is as short as I can make it. But this will be my longest episode yet. If you stick it out all the way through, please let me know you made it all the way through. I know I'm talking fast, but there's a lot to cover. I appreciate all of you very much out there in RPG land. I hope you're doing great, and hopefully it won't be a couple months till my next episode. Until then, game on. Follow Me and Die is an old-school RPG podcast. I share my experiences and ideas about role-playing games that all started with the Holmes Blue Box Basic Dungeons & Dragons over 40 years ago. I've played lots of role-playing games that were new in the late 70s through the mid-80s, and some of those I still like to play, especially Dungeons & Dragons. But there's more than older role-playing games out there. I share ideas that will fit into any game or genre. So check out my podcast. I'm always looking for a few good minions.
Better do what Grubba says. Knows how to wield a sword. Spells arcane and divine. Up on a shield to a wolf. And if you have the time, he's got a mean sales pitch. He even makes it rhyme. And if you need a job, this is his go-to line. Some people wanna die more. I can't imagine why. They say once you pop the bomb, there's nothing left to buy. But if you wanna die rich, go find the bomb, go.